And piss and vinegar, here we go.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified with your host, Eric Taylor, myself, Shiva Maharaj. And we are back after a one-week hiatus because Eric was busier than the Pope and I was sicker than a dog. So together, we are back with the U.S. uniting 30 countries to disrupt global ransomware attacks.
I just want to go on the record and, like, I always say this, and this is full of piss and vinegar, but name one freaking federal program that ever works the way it's supposed to.
CJIS.
This is going to be a great segue show. Holy crap. Here we go.
Eric, have you ever pen tested a company that failed every single test or almost every single test and they just don't want to get back to you? Because
yes,
they have a long-standing contract with a court system to provide software and they are just an insecure piece of shit.
Yes. So you know what? I was on the fence on doing this, but I'm just going to do it because, you know, why the hell not? There is a company in North Carolina called Courthouse Computer Systems that just doesn't want to get back to me at all. And I just don't care anymore.
And just for context here, how long has it been? 3 months, 4 months that you've been trying to get through to them?
Mm-hmm. It's been about 3 months, yeah.
Okay. So this is not Eric finding something this weekend like he did another vendor that's out in the MSP community, but we may not get into that. Who knows? But this is something he has been trying to responsibly disclose to this company for the better part of 3 months. This is a company that probably falls under CJIS regulation.
I'm going to say they do because they are dealing with court records for municipalities. They have two IIS, Windows IIS servers that hosted in or that are publicly facing. And it doesn't appear through everything that I've tested on that they have any sort of firewall behind it. So like they almost have two servers with a WAN IP configured to them and they're running VNC.
Ain't nothing wrong with a little VNC.
Yeah, man. Just nice remote access. You know, I even went so far and this may get me in trouble. But I even went so far as to start failing, brute forcing VNC, just doing something to get their attention. You know, logging my IP, them filing an abuse attack against my ISP, you know, because we're doing this. They are clearly not logging their shit or reviewing their logs or whatever, which is what we always go back to a lot of so much. They don't look at their logs.
But they probably have a SIM.
Oh.
Because once you have a SIM, that's all you need to be actionable.
Yeah.
You know, that and WebRoot, of course, but whatever.
You're so tempting me. the inside jokes.
Oh, God.
I wish you guys
I missed this. I really do. And I hope you guys missed us as much as we missed you.
This is crazy. So, I've gone about a week without ADHD medicine, so you know what kind of episode this is going to be. But
a fun one.
This is episode 32. This is crazy.
Yes, it is. 32, and we've been doing this straight since middle of March, man. Just last week, there were no recordings. So, you know what I think you should do? You should send an email to Jenny Sirley at CISA, because we've been trying to get her on here.
Yes.
And give her the rundown on this court company.
Mm-hmm.
And say, I'm not saying because we gave you this, you got to come onto the show, but couldn't hurt.
It would be awful nice.
And so awesome, I think. You know, I read into her background. She is, I believe, a retired lieutenant general. Like, she's got pedigree behind her in her career, dude. Like, she was part of standing up Cybercom.
Yes, I didn't know, like, about Cybercom.
I mean, you look at her, she just looks like a really nice lady. I'm not saying that she's not, but like when you read about her, you're like, oh my God, she is a hitter.
Yeah.
Like, good on her, man. And I think we can have some really interesting conversations. But anyway, back to the U.S. bringing in or uniting 30 countries to fight global ransomware. I'm going to ask you a question and you tell me what you think.
Here we go.
Do you think that is going to do anything in the grand scheme of things to make the ransomware problem go away.
Not a damn thing. Not a damn thing. Because, look, okay, let's spin this a little bit. Okay. This is going to get really possibly political or whatever, but I don't care. So
it's a good thing you're on the right podcast for that.
You know, we've been talked about before about being, you know, politically correct, checked at the door. Hat off to you to Dark Cubed and the folks over there. But anyway, you go to a school and it says gun-free zone, but yeah, there's still shootings. You can make all the laws in the world. Doesn't mean the fucking criminals are going to listen to you. They're going to do whatever they want.
Well, here's my take on this, right? Last week, Matt Lee, Pax8, Director of Security and Compliance, I think he is.
I think that's his official
title. Something along those lines. Matt, if I mess that up, please scold me and let me know, and I will issue a correction at some point or the other. He shared a link that a child was born with complications because there was a ransomware attack at the hospital where the mom was giving birth. And everyone is up in arms like, you know, this is what happens because of ransomware, blah, 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 blah. Now, Do I think it's a sad situation? And the child passed away eventually. Definitely a sad situation. But, and this is going to be an unpopular opinion, I don't blame the ransomware operators. You know who I blame? The hospital. For not having the appropriate controls in place to mitigate and or move on from a hack. And I'm not calling these things incidents anymore because I know that's insurance parlance to get away from that word of hacking. And why, and by the way, the parents of that child, I think they brought an action against the ransomware group. I don't know if the hospital's involved, but they should be. Put them in this discovery chain and let's find out how this ransomware operator got in. Let's find out what they did, how they moved, and why it was not caught in time. Furthermore, I mean, Eric, this is your wheelhouse, so I'm going to let you get up on this one. What about the IRP? You get hit with ransomware. Okay, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Why did it affect patients?
So this is, there's a lot to the story. I was digging into it over the weekend, and it's really interesting. So apparently the mother that, can we still say mother or do we have to say birthing? You know what? I don't care what they.
Mom. The yes. Mom. Because I don't want to go down that path of questioning anything. She gave birth to a baby and unfortunately lost that. And having kids myself, I could not even fathom what that would feel like.
So the mom claimed that she would have gone to a different hospital if she had known for a second that the hospital that she gave birth to or gave birth at for her little girl was undergoing a cybersecurity incident. The hospital says, you know, it's not really our fault. It's the doctor's fault if she gave birth at the hospital because the staff knew. And from what I know about a lot of these medical hospitals, doctors are contractors inside of the medical facility. So, you know, it's a lot of, you know, pointing fingers, this and that. But, I mean, not to divulge too much of personal life, but, you know, my son's very, very sick and had to go through many, many operations in the infancy of his life. But my daughter is very fine. My oldest son is very fine. If you had a normal baby, what part did technology fail? I understand, you know, if you got a complication, you have a special needs, you have, you know, all that. Like I said, you know, I got a son that very much special needs and has a lot of complications. But what happened between birth and 9 months that went horribly awry to actually lose a child? That's really the one part that I really wonder. But so where in the world did this ransomware really affect patient care for that?
Other than the headline.
Yeah.
And the question I posed to Matt Lee, which Matt, I'm calling you out here, it went unanswered. What is the recourse? Like, okay, let's, you want to beat your drum, ransomware, whatever. The only time things change is when there's adverse recourse to someone or something. How many times are these healthcare institutions going to be ransomwared? And now we're tying patient life or mortality to the ransomware. Mm-hmm. When are they going to be held responsible? Why is the cost of life being calculated after the fact and not before, when it's time to spend money for cybersecurity?
Yeah, I mean, I made it very public when my wife was sick and she went to one of these aftercare freaking hospital craps. You know, like, they were breaking so many HIPAA laws. Like, I was screaming at the top of my lungs on Facebook.
What, how Gmail and Yahoo aren't acceptable email addresses to send PHI to?
No.
And, but it's encrypted. There's a little lock in the address bar.
Oh, okay. So, you know, that's,
we're good.
At least that's good. Yeah. So the fact that they would just leave workstations unattended, unlocked, you know.
No, well, it's not like they're using one login for everyone, right? Like room A, room B.
No, they're actually using, you know, to some of their credit, they are using RFID NFC cards.
I can get with that. I just don't like unattended workstations being left open. But, you know, we are informed consumers.
And I am a hacker. So, like, I just want to take a Proxmox 3, get close enough, clone it, and then take one of my other cards and just start going around. Because, but, you know, that's just me. I'm just squirrely as shit like that. So, like,
well, you're a pen tester, right? It's about finding ways in and then going and responsibly disclosing, like, what you're trying to do with this court company. Like,
yeah,
you're only trying to help here, and they are willfully ignoring it. Dare I say, being negligent on their part. But back to the U.S. uniting these countries. It's interesting. This came out around the same time that two ransomware operators were just arrested in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to say it was Reval, but they sought ransomwares up to $70 million, and they've ransomwared hundreds of companies, which would lead people to think it were Reval.
I don't know. This is the one part, you know, I was reading through this, but, you know, those who have it are looking at us on YouTube can see the highlighted section. Let me just read it just for the audio people. So in this article, it says two suspects were arrested, including a 25-year-old believed to be a crucial member of a large ransomware operation. I don't know if ReEvil is considered a large ransomware operation anymore. They're not pushing out I don't know if they are as large as they used to be, because their name and shame site is not as active as it used to be. So either they are, one, not as active as they used to be, or two, they're getting really damn good at collecting payments.
I think they have adapted their TTPs. Whether they're still trading under Reval or some other name, which means if a new name, new ConnectWise head coming. But it's interesting timing that both of these were released around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not the first arrest in the Ukraine of major hackers. I think Conti got, some of their people got picked up in either Kiev or Belarus in the last few months. Okay. And we've seen they've gone as far as Israel to arrest suspected Russian hackers.
Mm-hmm.
So, if, yes, you're going to get some top line benefits, but these groups are so entrenched in countries that allow them to operate, it's very unlikely to make a lasting effect or a lasting difference.
Mm-hmm.
And they pop up new names faster than some people change their underwear.
Yeah, I mean, we see this with businesses a lot where, you know, you'll get some sort of federal indictment or whatever. You get in some trouble with the law. They'll just shut down business and open up business as a new name. And that's on the legal side. You think it's going to be much harder for somebody illegally to do it? I mean, come on, guys. It's, you know, there, a lot of people keep saying, oh, we're just going to make cryptocurrency illegal. And thankfully, U.S. government said, yeah, we're not really going to do that. You know, there's, excuse me, while there are a ton of illegal activities, sorry, I got something in my throat there, that's happening on cryptocurrency, there's way far more legal activities happening on cryptocurrency. A ton of hobbyists, a ton of miners doing whatever in the world they want to do, but it's like a 9-to-1 ratio of illegal or legal to illegal transactions. So,
you know, this morning, Chris Ahlberg, who is the founder of Recorded Future. And yes, we like Recorded Future, but we like John Wetzel more. Sorry, guys. Good job, John. He put out a post this morning on Twitter saying that we have to be careful about companies that are being sold to China or Chinese controlled companies. And I replied to it saying, you know, I'm less concerned about that and more concerned about investments, hidden investments into US companies, technology companies that give them access to the algorithms, the programming and everything else. But you know what I'm curious about? And this is something I posted to them because they are Recorded Future and they should be able to look into this if they care to. Let's look at the money laundering that's going on due to NFTs. Okay, let's track the money coming out of NFT transactions and going into special investment vehicles and SPACs and everything else. Let's take a look at that. Like, you guys really want to talk about this stuff? Let's go into the underbelly of this.
Yeah. That'd be a good one. We got to get John on here for next week or something and really have him dive into that. I mean, I know that'll be a major treasure trove of information that, you know, that would be a really, really good conversation.
Well, think about it. An NFT is just like art, right?
Yeah, but so, yeah, I really got to bone up on NFTs because I'm just not as vast.
It's horseshit to buy horseshit, basically.
Yeah. You know, it's like I make a drawing and then it's like I'm selling
the digital version.
Yeah.
Or the digital rights to it. But, you know, my point about this is art is something that may be worthless to one person and worth a tremendous amount of money to someone else. So creating value there to create a transaction to launder money, I would say is probably highly likely and has been going on.
Maybe, maybe.
But where does that money go? If they are laundering, where are they taking that money?
I don't think anybody really knows, do they? Yeah, I kind of look up for our next episode, maybe for this Friday, because this really is striking a chord because I was listening to another podcast.
How dare you? There is only one podcast.
I think it was the Jack Reciters, whatever, but maybe it was Grumpy Old Geeks or something. But there was an artist.
Two guys, one cave. Seriously funny, though.
I got to check that out.
Bert Kreischer, Tom Segura.
There was somebody talking about how there was a famous artist who went out and who said he hated NFTs or whatever and sold like and dropped an NFT and come to find out it was done by a hacker or whatever. It was a crazy, crazy story of how it really went through, but it kind of opens up my eyes like, you know, this is still the Wild Wild West when it comes to a lot of these things.
Well, I think the only way you're going to, well, the only way the government's going to regulate this is by allowing the commercial banks and the investment banks to hold, trade, and transact with cryptocurrency. That's the backdoor way in because it is supposedly decentralized, right?
Well, see, there's, you do have that, but you also have private people that are doing things. So, you know, you have people have a private wallets. You know, we know several people who do mining and transfer to private, you know, personal wallets, things of that nature.
Why? So, they don't want to get their shit stolen on Coinbase?
That was an interesting story, too. Oh, my gosh.
With the number of authentication points you needed to have to actually complete the theft of the Bitcoin, it was interesting. But then again, with all the breaches out there,
exactly,
your data and the reuse of passwords and SMS MFA, which is my favorite of all, and I hope you people understand I'm being sarcastic here, that it's relatively easy to scrape the data together and commit something like that.
And this brings up a good question. I've been wondering, how long is it going to take for the hackers or whoever to start correlating this data from LinkedIn, from Facebook.
I think it's done. Well, let's go on Facebook. Let's find your mother's maiden name, your favorite color, and all the other secret answer questions that you answer, right? I mean, how many people have that openly on their Facebook?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. But the fact that people have that and they're not updating, they're not following the trends, they're not saying, oh, you know, this data was leaked, now I really need to change that stuff. Like,
well, a lot of it is mooted if you have proper MFA, right?
Yeah, MFA, not 2FA, multi-factor.
Yeah, but a lot of it would be mooted in that scenario. I think if the government wants to regulate anything, make MFA mandatory for every service. Like,
dude, they're having problems even getting that done with CMMC.
Fuck CMMC, man. That shit's a dumpster fire waiting to happen, okay? Because until they take that in-house and it's for the DOD, by the DOD, as I've said 1,001 times, it doesn't mean shit, okay? And as long as there are multiple compliance regimes, it means even less to me. But, sure. You know, if you want to put these 30 countries together, okay, fine, you know, let's use that to create a framework of bullshit, blah, blah, blah. But why not mandate every software company to include, whether prices have to go up or not, that's a whole different story, but MFA should be mandatory.
Yeah.
There should not be any more SMS-based 2FA.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you're using SMS and just Google TOTP codes and all that, it's...
There are enough services out there for every provider to put this onto their... or every software vendor to put this on their product.
Yeah, I mean, I think even with Cisco's Duo Security, that they have a really good discount program, or may even be free for vendors to actually start integrating with them, because, you know, they're getting it from the partners.
Dude, make it a cost of doing business.
Yeah.
Right? Like, whether or not it's included at the baseline level, whatever, and their price is raised, how long are we going to allow people to cheap out on security to the point where it puts you in a detrimental position?
That's a question for Jen.
I think Miss Jen Easterly or Mrs. Jen Easterly should join us. As I said in one of our posts that Eric tagged you in, I guarantee you we'll ask you better questions. They may not be good questions, but they'll be better questions.
They would be. Yeah, but, I mean, it's... I think we've said it many times where, you know, we are so far behind on cybersecurity as a nation state and a whole for businesses that if we don't start doing
nation state, now, oh, sorry, go ahead.
If we don't start doing stuff now, we're just totally fucked.
Well, speaking of nation state, I think Lockbit kind of just fucked themselves.
How so?
They decided to go after an Israeli firm that provides aviation consulting to the IDF. Like, why are you going to go poke the bear?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, I think if you're going after a target like that, it's probably nation state. But hey, what do I know? I'm just an idiot in a room doing a podcast. So,
between two idiots.
But seriously, why are you going to poke the bear? Why are you going to go after the 8200 or something the 8200 is going to have their hooks into?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to get Stuxnet netted?
Dude, they are... They've got balls. That's like... They're just like, whatever. We don't care.
I agree with you. But, you know, to quote John Murchison of Blackpoint Cyber, the juice had to be worth the squeeze for them to go after that.
They had to, man. There's something going on in the back end where it's like, yeah, you know, I'm not sure if this is just a big dick swinging competition of
longer. Okay, remember there was in the news recently a Russian hacker was just extradited to Russia.
Yep.
Which no one saw coming. But part of that story was that he was arrested in Israel, extradited from Israel to the United States.
Yep.
And Russia really wanted him back, and I believe they found a Israeli citizen and charged her with drug trafficking or something to try to get a prisoner exchange or something or the other. So is this hit against this company directly related or is it retaliation for arresting and extraditing that hacker to the United States now that we know that person is back in Russia?
Could be.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
There may be something bigger at play where, you know, they're just trying to flex a muscle, like, don't fuck with us too much. We know.
I don't think it's flex. I think we're way past flexing muscles. You know what I think was flexing muscles? Bandwidth.com and VoIP.ms. I don't think those were attacks. I think those were probes to determine and establish what our TTPs would have been to continue map out our response and our soft targets.
They're still dealing with that too, aren't they?
To some degree, yes or no. I don't think it's something that you can just draw a line in the sand and say, okay, from today, we're perfect. There's going to be, you know, while they were dealing with that mitigation, what was going on elsewhere in their system? Was there persistence?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the things you have to look at. And I'm more inclined than trying to figure out, you know, here's one thing I want from all of these major incidents. And maybe this is something you would agree with. I want the postmortem.
Yes. There's so many times that we want postmortem. I mean, they're like, how did they get in? Granted, from an incident.
I don't care about the mitigations.
I do. But then again, that's my world too. So
I'll tell you why I don't care about the mitigations, because they're going to wrap that bullshit and say, well, we can't tell you that because we have to protect blah, blah, fucking blah.
Yeah.
But tell us how they got in. Mm-hmm. Tell us how they spread. Tell us what they reached out and touched.
Yeah, that would be nice, but
create a safe harbor around. You know, let's go back to legislation. Let's have meaningful legislation around things that are built to protect our infrastructure and our ability to defend. Under a safe harbor guideline, when they disclose these things, they shouldn't be eligible for prosecution or fines unless it was gross negligence.
Yeah.
Then whatever.
And I think that's what Jen and them are trying to do, because they're trying to create law now, from what I was seeing over the weekend, where you have 24 hours to disclose any sort
that's
of
fair. Function.
That's something you've been touting for a while. You know, well, I've been wanting to do a little bit more of a grace period, but
here's what I think, because I like CMMC sometimes.
You waffle.
Right.
I'm gonna next episode. I'm gonna bring an ego, and every time you waffle, I'm just gonna kill me or flapper.
Well, I like the premise of CMMC. Its current implementation, I think, is horseshit. But you know, you have the five levels, right? Why don't we start rating every company in this country on levels 1 to 5? Level 5 is critical infrastructure. Level 4 is just under that, and so and go down. You know, as you. And basically, based on what your rating is how long you have to disclose a hack, or as the insurance companies like to call it, an incident.
That's just going to be another way of companies trying to race to the bottom. Well, we're not that important.
Well, make it 3 days, or make it 3 days.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a level 1, which is the lowest, you have 3 days to report a breach. If you're level 1, it's 24 hours.
Yeah.
You know, one thing we had Vince on 2 weeks ago, but at least by the time this thing comes out. And one of the many things we agreed with him on was government needs to learn to fail faster.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And my problem, you know, I was for the longest while, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I was pro regulation on MSPs.
Yes.
And the more I think about this is the more I think it is the worst idea possible. Because
are you getting to my side where it needs to be regulation against the business?
Worse.
Oh boy, here we go. Newsflash, everybody.
We're never going to get a sponsorship from a major IT company after this one. It has to be placed on the publishers of the software. Don't tax the MSP. They have no R&D budget. They barely have resources. Put the onus on the software companies to be secure. Put the onus on the software companies to select who they partner with. Make sure they're not giving a WMD to a 12-year-old who can throw a tantrum.
So, yeah, no, I don't. I think, okay, so if you go back and say the businesses themselves need to be under this mandate that's going to cover the software companies to begin with. But I think
I don't
until the owner, I think until the owners of these businesses really have a vested interest in the actual security of their business, they're not going to care.
Okay. So, but we could, let's take an RMM because they're so secure, right? And they are the epitome of a rat in a command and control setup.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no possible way to hack into these things because they're so uber secure with their 35-year-old code. How many providers are actually providing the appropriate training to the partners they bring on to use these products? Or are they just saying, take it, run with it, go forth and fuck yourself?
Pretty much the latter. I mean, a lot of them have their own training partner program.
It's bullshit. It's optional, right? It's not mandatory.
And some of them even charge for it.
Well, that's why it's not mandatory, because of what they charge for it. It's like IT Glue giving you a PDF for $450 and saying that's your onboarding guide. Like, fuck you, IT Glue and Kaseya. But back to my thing about regulating IT providers, technology changes too quickly to create what that baseline minimum is going to be. And legislation, there's no way legislation can keep up with how quickly IT changes.
No. So that's why I think, you know, if you put it onto the business, it covers the software company, it covers the technologists, the MSP, MSSP, Burns, what a MSSP, whatever. Get rid of the dumpster fires.
Yeah, but how do you do that? You got to put minimums. Like $50 minimum on software is kind of bullshit, right?
But see, yeah, but it's going to be a trickle-down effect. So, you know, if you have a neighborhood gas station or neighborhood pharmacy, you know, what mandates are you going to put onto those folks to make them do business? You know, here we go. We're going to do a little bit more political bullshit. So why not? You know, if the government's going to say you're going to be forced to mandate all of your employees to have a fucking vaccine, whether they want to or not, then what's the difference of, you know, making sure there's some sort of compliancy in place?
Are we going into my company, my choice now?
You know, this, oh my gosh, this feels like a Friday episode, but here we go.
Whatever, yeah, man.
Sure, why not?
You know, we had a little break. We got some excess piss and vinegar that's got to get taken out before we can sit down with people and be somewhat civilized. But let's take the politics out of this for 1 second, right? Let's pretend we're in a country we love and we want to see it do better. And we want to do things to make this country better.
Yep, absolutely.
What would that be?
To quote Matt Lee in Pax 8, raise the tide. I don't know. those who are not on video, Shiva just about fell off his chair. But
I'm going to throw this out there for you, Matt. I love you. I love your bald head and your big beard. That makes Eric not feel like a security practitioner because he doesn't have that beard.
I know.
But saying you want to raise the tide when you were at your former position makes sense because, you know, you're lifting everybody. But I really want to have a sit down and talk to you, preferably on our podcast, because why not? But I'm inviting you to come onto the podcast and convince me why I should... me or anyone else should be a part of helping raise the tide. Because now that you are director of security and compliance over at Pax 8, you can take on that fight. And I want to understand how and why this is going to happen. I really do. And if I can help, great. And if by me helping means I shut up, hey, I could probably try to maybe kind of do that.
At least not on this podcast anyway.
On Zoom.
You know, and I mean, it's been discussed in those PAX 8 CMMC groups that I'm a member of.
How's that coming along?
I plead the fifth.
How many people are ready for CMMC a year and 3 months later?
4 companies, I think.
Really?
Yeah, one of them that we know of is actually going to become or trying to become a C3PA Oh, whatever the hell.
Oh, fuck me.
There's two companies I think are CPR, whatever.
C-3POs with an A.
Yeah, they're the practitioner version of it or whatever.
That's my problem with CMMC, right? It's like you have so many variations of bullshit that can either audit you, give you some form of certification, blah, blah, fucking blah.
I just think they really need to change the title because, I mean, even though I was on the Marine Corps and I'm familiar with acronyms, every time we start talking about C-3PAOs, I start thinking of freaking Star Wars, man.
They did that on purpose.
I can never say it straight. I'm just thinking of R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Well, that's what you got. From now on, just call it R2-D2.
There we go. From now on.
Done.
So, but anyway, yeah.
Back to Lockbit 2.0, poking the bear. How long do you give them before they either get murder, death, killed, figuratively, not literally, or have to rebrand to something else?
I don't know. I mean, Lockbit, they've definitely got the cojones. They've been around for a while. I don't know. I think they're going to be immunable to this.
That would be interesting because the IDF and what is called their 8200, they're capable.
They are. Will they find out where Lockbit 2.0 operators are at?
I don't know. Look for some mushroom clouds. But, you know, it is what it is. But speaking of malware, did you see that there was a Trojan being given out as a way to determine if phones had Pegasus on it?
I did not until you shared this with me this morning. So I took a little bit of a hiatus this weekend, but you know, this is definitely going back to Record of Futures and you know what they were talking about. But yeah, this Pegasus is just a gift that keeps on giving, isn't it?
I just think its use is more widespread than people actually understand or would care to believe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's just been used by nation states, or if it has been used by nation states, it's a lot more than people have been led to believe. Now, I tagged you in something on LinkedIn this morning, something along the lines of, you know, it's not like there's a platform out there that exists to determine if Pegasus has been put on your phone. And I think in parentheses, I had cough, not webroot cough.
You are so tempting me to go down that road, aren't you?
Well, you know, I saw, as an aside to the Pegasus thing here, I saw a vendor that I hold in high regard post that they're doing something with webroot. And I sank in my chair. I laughed hysterically, almost to the point of crying. Then I shared my screen for you to see to try to trigger you.
Oh, it triggered me where I want to just go on full blast. So, fuck, here we go. You know, it's webroot, when it came out for the MSP model, was the best thing since sliced bread. It was a light foothold where it had very little resources. You can
run it. What do you expect if you can't do shit?
Exactly. You seriously, all you got to do as a regular user is unregister the DLL for webroot and you make it immune. It doesn't work. And now you're going to have a third party EDR.
Yeah, but it's not like Cylance and stuff like that has the same vulnerability or workaround.
I think Cylance does, or is it SentinelOne?
Not SentinelOne. That's a different workaround, but Cylance definitely has that type of workaround, even though their tech on LinkedIn told you no.
Yeah. Yeah, fucktards. But yeah, I mean, webroot has been the laughingstock of the cybersecurity world. It's like, this thing stops nothing. It doesn't stop ransomware payloads. It doesn't stop anything. So why is a cybersecurity firm going to partner with a dumpster fire of an MSP AV and think that they're doing whatever? I don't know if it's just some sort of marketing ploy to get their name out there a little bit more. Or
potentially. Consider how many IT providers use webroot. Personally, I think they use webroot because it's the cheapest thing possible out there.
Yeah.
I've heard rumors as low as 15 or 20 cents an agent.
Man, you know what? If we ever went to some of our partners with even half that price, they would laugh us out of the country.
Whatever. That's not my hill to die on. But
no.
Back to NSO, I think this is even more reason why I am comfortable with deploying CrowdStrike Mobile across client-owned devices, because yes, it's a known quantity, and the likelihood that it's a rat or a Trojan or something else is slim to none.
Yeah, let's go a side topic a little bit, because this is something I was brainstorming this morning.
But we've never done that before on this episode.
No, not even in the past 40 minutes this episode's been recording either. Told you, I'm ADD like a mofo today. I was auditing a new client that we got last week, and they have a ton of legacy personal devices.
Legacy slash too cheap to upgrade. Okay, gotcha. Yep. Okay.
So their BYOD and the mobile device were to Duo MFA. So anybody who's familiar with Duo, now you have your free MFA and it doesn't require your devices to be updated. But if you go one step up to Duo Beyond, I think it is, whatever their $6 plan is, you have device health where you can enforce devices to actually freaking do this. And it brings an interesting question to me this morning. If you're going to have MFA in your organization, should the company be mandated to either require their employees to have up-to-date equipment to leverage MFA like Duo, or issue out company devices?
I'm going to take an unusual approach to this one.
Okay, because I'm torn.
How do people get, well, pre-COVID, how did people get to work?
They drove their fat, happy butts in the car?
In the car they owned, right?
Si, senor.
So using that mentality, I would say let them make, they it should not be an issue for an employee to put a MFA application on their personal phone. As long as we know you're not getting any other data from their phone. Forget a BYOD policy. I'm just saying, Duo MFA off the Google Authenticator, Microsoft Authenticator. It should not be an issue for employees to put that on their phone, because if they can drive their own car to work, to and from work, the least they can do is do that. Putting that cost burden on an employer to provide cell phones is unnecessary in the SMB. In the enterprise, okay, I can see that being a thing. Or get the Duo dongles or a YubiKey or YubiKey or something like that. But with all of the applications people have on their phones right now, putting Duo MFA, Microsoft Authenticator, come on, it's not a big deal. And yeah, give them a bypass on the Duo Health to not be up to date or whatever.
But I mean, when you, so like in the Apple world, you 15.0.1 just got dropped. So those who don't have Apple, or if you have an Apple device, upgrade.
Don't talk to me. If you don't have Apple, I just can't.
I know. Shiva's got this obsession. If you text somebody and it's not a blue box and it's a green, he doesn't want to talk to you anymore. But anyway, we're seeing iOS devices as far back as 13.x. So I mean, they're not just like one or two minor versions. We're talking major versions.
Now, are these phones that can't upgrade? I think the older stuff can only upgrade to 12 point something, and they still get security updates. So they get dot dots, whatever, on the 12 cycle.
I mean, should it be required that employees keep an updated phone, somewhat updated phone?
I think it's a teaching experience. I think maybe internal IT, if you have that at your company, or if you're an MSP and you know what you're doing, maybe you should actually have a conversation with them and say, guys, we're at 15. If you're still on 13, what the fuck? Like, come on, let's update here. Let's get you the new emojis, because you know you want that.
Yeah. I don't even think 13 has the ability for poop emoji.
Then why use it?
Exactly.
I mean, come on. Everything else is a hot steaming pile of poop, so join in. But that's where I think you have to go with that. Like, you know, putting CrowdStrike Mobile onto a personal phone, I think is probably not a good idea. because it is very invasive. It's designed to basically pull copious amounts of data off of that device. But something like MFA, that's benign, and it helps you do your job, or helps you accomplish your job, just as using your own car to and from work helps you.
But what if I use a public transportation, Shiva?
Who's paying for the Metro card? Or I'm sorry, the transit card?
Food stamps. I get your point, though, but yeah.
Oh, boy. That is a whole different type of podcast.
Yeah, that's why I diverted. I'm like, nope, let's just stay over here.
Oh, boy. All right. Almost triggered. But feasibly, you are using your own money to buy your tickets, your card, whatever you need for your mode of transport. So just using that mentality, it's not like, do cell phones still charge per text message? Or is everything unlimited at this point?
I think everything, even the pay-as-you-go plans are unlimited, I think.
So if it's unlimited, there's no cost burden. And if there's a cost burden, use a goddamn MFA app that uses the Wi-Fi you're connected to at work that your company allows you to listen to Spotify on.
Yeah.
Like, don't penalize your company, but yet try to reap the benefit of being able to use Spotify in the office, not on your data plan, right? Don't be a motherfucker. Mm-hmm. But what do I know?
I even had one that was the one I was talking about just a moment ago. It's like, oh, we'll just put iPads in front of the workstations, and that would just be tied to one account. So as different users are coming up in the manufacturing, they would just look there and just accept it. And I'm like,
no. You know, if you're manufacturing, I would probably look into something with an RFID or a Yubico or something like NFC.
Yeah.
Because you have a cleanliness factor being on just on a manufacturing floor. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But there are ways around these things. I think allowing people to make the excuses, no, I don't want to use my personal phone, or no, come on, we're way past that. This country has been rocked by ransomware for the last 2 years.
Yep.
And it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better, even if we have 30 allies creating a coalition here, because it's not going to be lasting. It's not going to be effective change, I think. You know, indicting people in absentia isn't going to stop them from operating in countries without extradition.
Exactly.
As bad as that sounds, and I know it's not towing the party line or whatever, but it goes back to the question that I asked Matt or people on Matt Lee's post. How do we fix this? What is the recourse? Once we can identify what the recourse is to all these things, is how we can build out a better response, or even a response.
That's when we're going to build back better.
Make America great again.
2.0? I don't know.
Brian, do you have the red caps?
Oh, so many inside jokes on that one. Oh my gosh. We'll have to disclose that one day. Anyway.
Well, we got to bring Brian on to do that one, I think.
Well, his little California ass needs to get up before 3 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time.
This is true. But he is in California, so,
but you know. Whatever. They're freaking on holiday time all the time, so. Over there, you know, stomping berries with their toes and crap.
Eh, some people call that wine.
I just call it drinking foot fungus.
That's just disgusting. And with that, I think we're good to go.
I think so as well, before we go way
off. We are circling the drain.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for tuning in for yet another hopefully hilarious episode of Amplified and Intensified. We hope you enjoy the content. Do us a favor, please like and share our content. Tell a friend about us. We want to grow this freaking crazy thing that we have here. Until next time, stay well, my friends.